This meeting will be called to order for April 27th, 2021, regular meeting of the Chatham County Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission. We will pause for invocation and the pledge of allegiance. Mr. Wayne Noah, lead us in prayer.
Let's bow. Father, we thank you for this time that we can get together to handle the business of the Metropolitan Planning Commission. I pray that our decisions be for the benefit of the city as a whole and that everything we do would just benefit every citizen. And we consider that as we make these decisions. All this we ask in the name of.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, the liberty and justice for all. Good afternoon, everybody. For staff, petitioners, and members of the public who are participating, our procedures will be as follow. The agenda is broken down into several parts. First, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgements. Next, the consent agenda, which consists of items for which the applicant is in agreement with the staff recommendation, and there are no known objections. This will be followed by regular business, old business, and adjournment. For each item on regular business, the staff will make a presentation. The staff presentation will be followed by a presentation by the petitioners, should they elect to do so. The petitioner will be allotted a time frame of 10 to 20 minutes. The board may then ask questions of the petitioner or staff for clarification. Afterwards, the floor will open for public comment. If you wish to comment on the item with the board that the board is considering at the time, please use raise your hand feature on your screen. Do not use the feature until the item you want to comment on is being considered. At the appropriate time, you will be recognized and staff will unmute your microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by the chair, your microphone will be muted and the chair will recognize the next speaker. The total public comment time will be equivalent to the petitioner's presentation time. Therefore, it is important that you use raise your hand feature during the hearing on that item. If you want to speak on a petition, once the floor is closed for the public comment on a petition, no additional public speakers will be allowed. If you're not certain you want to speak, still use raise your hand feature on your computer. You will have the option to decline when your name is called. After public comment, the petitioner will have the opportunity for rebuttal and then additional needed questions by the board. Finally, the board will take that action. And I ask you to please mute your microphones until you speak. So we'll start. For approval of the agenda, I need a motion.
Noah, motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, Mr. Brown, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Joyner, is he with us today? Mr. Joyner is not with us. Thank you. Tom Woodwoody? Tom Woodwoody, how do you vote? Malik Watkins? Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Jarrett?
Yes.
Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Sheila Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
Laureen Bowles?
Yes.
Motion approved. Next, notices, proclamation, acknowledgements. Notice on May 18th, 2021, regular MPC meeting be at 1:30 p.m. Planning Commission will be as known, go to webinar, and I want fellow commissioners to know that you are welcome to come back to the Planning Commission meeting here physically if you wish to do so. Okay, and take a, let's see, information items for board members, development plans submitted by, for review. Okay, number two, items requested to be removed from the final agenda. Rezoning map amendment, 182 Rice Mill Drive, rezoned from RSF 6 to R10. We need to make a vote on that.
Motion to remove.
Second?
Second, Smith.
Mr. Brown, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Joseph Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Eula Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Lorraine Bowles?
Yes.
Is Tom Woodwoody here?
I am, and yes.
Thank you, Tom. And Malik Watkins? No response. And Rule Joiner's not here. Motion passes. And that item will be put off till June 8th, the one we just voted on, okay? Next will be item number five, rezoning map amendment, 5651 Ogeechee Road, rezoned from RA, AT, and PB to R3. And again, this is requested to be removed from the agenda. Do I have a motion?
Move to review, remove.
Second?
Second, Smith.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Brown, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Woodwoody?
Yes.
Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Malik Watkins? Joseph Irvin?
Yes.
Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Travis Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Eula Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
And Lorraine Bowles?
Yes.
Motion passes. Oh, Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
You made the motion. I know, sorry. The consent agenda, approval of April 6, 2021 meeting, regular meeting, and need a motion to approve that.
Motion approved.
Need a second?
I'll second it.
Who seconded?
That was Stevens.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Brown, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Woodwoody?
Yes.
Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Eula Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
And Lorraine Bowles?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you. There will be no old business. We go to regular business. Zoning map amendment, 5501 Montgomery Street, rezone quest from RSF 6 to BN.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and board members. Item number seven is a request to zone the property from residential single-family RSF6 to neighborhood business BN. Subject property is located in the Poplar Place, University Place neighborhood. This is near the stretch of Montgomery Street as it bends south of Durant Avenue. The subject property is filed and listed as 5501 Montgomery Street, but it's actually located at 221 Birchville Drive, as shown here. Some background on the case, the applicant, Shammy Magaba, who has owned the subject property and the adjacent lots towards Montgomery Street for a little over 15 years, and she owns the property that's outlined here in yellow and these two adjacent towards the east. The subject property in particular has operated as a hair salon since her ownership. Prior to the citywide zoning in 2019, all three lots were zoned BH, highway business, a commercial zoning district of the city's previous zoning ordinance. The new zoning ordinance designated the subject property as RSF6 and rezoned the other two properties as BN. According to the applicant, she first learned that her property had been rezoned last year while she was in the process of leasing her space out to a barber. Currently, the barbershop is operating as a non-conforming use. What I have on the screen are some images, some street images of the property. This is a front view of the property, the subject property from Birchville Drive. And this is a view of the property as it is now coming from Montgomery Street. Ms. Magaba has requested to have the subject property zoned to BN, the same as her other properties, and which would grant her the ability to retain commercial use of the subject property. The intent of the RSF districts are established to allow single-family detached development on varying lot sizes, which are indicated by the numbers following the district name. A limited number of non-residential uses are allowed that are compatible with single-family residential uses. The BN district is established to permit small-scale, neighborhood-oriented non-residential uses and upper-story residences. This district is intended to provide for limited commercial opportunities in a walkable environment and to reduce prevent impacts on adjacent or nearby residential uses. Uses in this district are intended to be located primarily on collector or arterial streets within convenient traveling distance from neighborhoods which they will serve. It is important to note that Birchville Drive is a two-lane unclassified residential roadway, not a collector or arterial street such as Montgomery Street is. What I have on the screen is a zoning and land use map. You can see here in the center of the screen, which is the hatched overlay, is the subject property. Abutting the subject property to the west is a single family home, and this area here is generally developed with single family homes as it's the RSF6 zoning district. Further towards the east, we have the BN zoning district, which pretty much overlays the fronting properties that are fronting on Montgomery. We have a vacant land here, which is owned by the applicant, and adjacent to the subject property is a vacant commercial office space. Further east across the highway, we have a more vacant commercial property. Towards the southeast, we have apartments which are zoned RMF 215. And immediately south of the subject property, we have a storage facility here, a commercial strip development here. And across the street, we have a mobile home park. And this is all zoned BN as well. Future land use category of the subject property is residential, suburban, single family. The comprehensive plan defines this category as an area identified for single family detached dwellings at a density not to exceed 5 units per acre. The proposed zoning and the current land use of the subject property is not consistent with this designated future land use category. Per the zoning ordinance, petitions for rezoning are required to be reviewed regarding specific standards. A few of the standards are that, one, whether the range of uses permitted by the proposed zoning district is more suitable than the range of uses that is permitted by the zoning district. I want to pull up a table which shows all of the uses in RSF 6 compared to BN. And staff's comment in regard to this standard is that the range of uses permitted in the BN zoning district are not more suitable at this location than the range of uses permitted in the RSF 6 zoning district. However, the RSF 6 zoning district limits the usability of the subject property, which was previously designated as commercial prior to 2019. And I pulled this up because I want everyone to take a look at these first two columns, the first one being the current zoning district, and the second, or the one in the middle, being the proposed zoning district. I'll just scroll down. As you can see, the ones, the rows highlighted in yellow are the uses that are not permitted in RSF 6. And there are a lot more uses that are permitted in BN, as you see, a convenience store, gas station, restaurants. These are uses that are much more intense than what's generally allowed in a single family residential neighborhood, as Birchfield Drive is. The next review criteria is whether the proposed zoning district addresses a specific need in the county or city. Staff's comment is that the proposed zoning district does not address a specific need in the city. However, the consistent and current use of the property as a personal care service shows that there is a demand being met for barbers and salons in the area. The next standard is whether the zoning proposal will adversely affect the existing use or usability of adjacent or nearby property. Staff's comment is some of the more intense uses in the BN zoning district have the potential to adversely impact adjacent and nearby nearby properties, developed residences. However, the less intense uses of BN are not likely to be a detriment. Another review criteria is whether the zoning proposal was compatible with the present zoning pattern and conforming uses of nearby property and the character of the surrounding area. Staff's comment is, although the zoning proposal would be an extension to the existing BN zoning pattern fronting along Montgomery Street, it would be encroaching further into the existing residential neighborhood on Birchville Street. The wide array of uses within BN have the potential to adversely impact the overall residential character of the street. Another criteria is whether the property to be affected by the zoning proposal has a reasonable use as currently zoned. Staff finds that as currently zoned, the property has one reasonable use, which is its current use as a non-conforming barber or hair salon. Property has operated as a hair salon for the past 15 years and is not suitable as a residential dwelling. There is a review criteria that acts or determines if the property is in 3,000 feet of a military base, and this property is indeed within 3,000 feet of the Hunter Army Airfield military base. One of their particular review criteria is whether the zoning proposal will permit a use that is suitable in view of the use of adjacent or nearby property within 3,000 feet of a military base, military installation, or airport. Staff finds that the zoning proposal would permit for uses that are similar in nature to property within 3,000 feet to the military installation. Regarding policy analysis, the comprehensive plan's future land use category designated for the subject property is not consistent with the zoning proposal. The future land use category presumes that the subject property will be used as a single family home in a mid to low density area. It makes no mention of non-residential uses. The future land use category for the adjacent properties closer towards Montgomery Street is designated as commercial neighborhood. The comp plan defines this category as nodal and strip business areas within predominantly residential areas and developed at a scale and intensity compatible with adjacent residential uses. The current land use and land use for the past 15 years of the subject property tells a more tells a reality more consistent with the commercial neighborhood future land use category than the residential suburban single family future land use category. Based upon the subject property's current and historic land use, along with its location within a residential neighborhood, staff is recommending denial of this request to rezone the property from RSF 6 to BN. However, staff is recommending approval for the rezoning of the property to BL, limited business. This zoning district is established to accommodate a variety of residential uses and a limited range of small-scale neighborhood-oriented commercial and non-residential uses together within the same zoning district. This district is intended to be used in conjunction with nearby or adjacent residential districts to create sustainable neighborhoods with convenient access to neighborhoods serving commercial uses. BL would allow for the barbershop to continue as a conforming use and allow for several other uses appropriate for the approximate location to residential dwellings. I'll pull this table back up. In the far right, I have listed some of the, well, all of the uses that are permitted in BL, and we feel this is a more of an appropriate zoning district given the close proximity to such a residential neighborhood. If the board has any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Mr. Noah?
Could you restate the zoning prior to 20, did you say 19?
Yeah, highway business or BH.
Which would be what today? Is there a new zoning for that category classification?
I believe neighborhood business would be something that's compatible or equivalent to that, but we didn't really take that same exact zoning district over into the new zone.
And this was done when NUZO was enacted, and there was proper notification sent to all property owners throughout this county. I believe we've been down this road once before. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Any other commissioner have a question for staff?
This is Karen.
Yes, ma'am.
Jarrett. Is there a reason why we think that it should not be left as a special use?
It's not really a special use. Now it's a non-conforming use.
Non-conforming use, I'm sorry.
We feel that since the property had been commercial property prior to the NUZO in 2019, and given its close proximity to Montgomery Street, we feel that this is an appropriate recommendation.
Any other questions from commissioners? Is the petitioner here?
Yes.
Ma'am, would you like to come forward and make a presentation if you wish? And please state your name for the record. Thank you.
My name is Shammy McGobble.
Yeah, talking that mic a little bit. There you go. Thank you.
So what I'm asking the council is if it could be put back the way it was so it would match the rest of the property, because when I took out the loan from the bank, it was all financed as a commercial property. And I've been using that for business since I purchased it. And right now, being that I injured my leg, I haven't been able to operate the salon, because my doctor recommended that it would take at least a year if I would recover. So being, you know, in the hardship of the finances, I decided I'd just go on and lease it to the barbershop. There are three young men in there. that are really doing good business. And I'm a former instructor at Savannah Tech, taught cosmetology for 15 years. And I've trained quite a bit of stylists and barbers in town. I would say out of three barbers and salons in town, I trained those owners. Two out of three of the hairstylists, I trained them, and I've had this property helping a lot of young people. When they finish school, they come in and they get a place of work. And as they succeed, they go in and open up their own businesses. So I'll ask the council to really consider it, to put it back where it would be uniform with the rest of the with the other two properties.
Are there any questions to the petitioner from the commissioners?
Karen here again, Karen Jarrett. Will the changing in zoning affect your loan on the property?
I believe it would, because being that it was zoned, when I took out the loan, it was zoned commercial.
But you haven't been contacted by the bank or anything like that?
No, because I don't think they know what's going on, just like I did not know that the zone had been changed until I got ready to lease the salon, I mean the property to the barber stylist. And when he went to get the license, they told him that the property wasn't zoned business, it was zoned commercial, residential.
And refused to give him the license or the permit?
Well, what they did, they gave him the license based on that. I had to finish my license, the one that I was operating with, which everything was still in, was still current. It had not expired, it had not closed.
So he was able to continue using it as a non-conforming use?
Right, but the only reason they told him that he could use it, well, they finish him the license, but they said, okay, we're going to issue you the license because according to me sending in my licenses, they say he'll be given the license because it would be like grandfathered in. But then if it's grandfathered in as a salon or barbershop, like later on in future, if I have expansion that I would like to do, like later on, being that I have a current cosmetologist instructor's license in Georgia, I would like to at least expand later and do like a cosmetology school and other businesses, So.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman Welch, I have a question. Has your insurance policy changed from residential to commercial?
No. It's still business, because right now I'm with State Farm Insurance. And it is, nothing has showed as residence to me. And like I said, I was never notified, never got any notification.
Yeah, because anytime you go from residential to commercial, your insurance policy should change. And I'm just giving you forewarning of that. And that, most times the banks are notified of that.
Apparently.
Because you have to have insurance on the said property under the status, whether it's residential or commercial being higher, because you're protecting more people, you're protecting the public that comes on the ground. So you may want to check into that, okay? But I don't want to get away from what we're discussing. Is there anybody in the public that wishes to ask a question to the petitioner? Please raise your hand on the computer, the raise your hand button. That's featured on your screen.
Mr. Chair, this is Travis Coles. I have a question for the petitioner.
Yes, sir.
Would the alternate zoning that staff has proposed not satisfy your needs for your business?
What was the question?
Ask that question again, please.
The staff has proposed an alternate zoning as opposed to the one that you are requesting that they seem to think would satisfy your need for your business. Would that take care of your need?
It certainly will if it goes back to, you know, the way where it was before. It certainly will, because then it'll be uniform with the other part of the property, the other two properties. I would really highly appreciate that.
Mr. Wayne, no, you have a question?
It would be for staff and then also the petitioner. The property that she owns that we're not talking about, the two lots, mm-hmm. What is the current zoning?
BN, neighborhood. BN.
And the staff is recommending a BL, correct?
Yes.
Which is different.
What is a BL? I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with a BL.
If I may, just for clarification, the reason that this...
Okay, if I may, this is Melanie Wilson, Executive Director. I just want to be really clear with regards to the staff recommendation. The reason that our recommendation for this particular property was light business versus the neighborhood business is because that house is transitioning into a stable, you know, stable neighborhood. So it still allows her to operate her business and to have other businesses. And those uses are still uses that are allowed in the neighborhood business. It's just that on that one lot, the uses wouldn't be as intense because it's transitioning into the neighborhood.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. And I wanted to make sure the petitioner understood that because she made the statement that as long as it's the same, I wanted to make sure she understood it's not exactly the same.
As long as it's not going to be depreciating.
Step up to the microphone, please, ma'am. Thank you.
As long as it's not going to depreciate my property and then get me in problems with the bank, because I don't know what the particular zoning consists of. But like I say, I would really appreciate if all three of them could still be, you know, zoned the same, just like it was previously when I purchased the property, because all those properties were BH.
Mr. Noah, you have another question?
Question for staff. You, if you don't mind, ma'am, stay right there because I'm going to ask you something as well.
Okay.
What, did we receive any calls in favor or against this petition?
We didn't receive any calls from the public.
Any calls? And have you spoken with your neighbors about what's going on? And if so, what were their comments? And were there comments that were made that we should know about?
No, they were just as surprised as I was. But with the neighbors, you know, they are fine. And I did get in touch with with Dr. Harris, who is the president of the Neighborhood Association, and she was able to reach out to all the neighbors and notify them, and the letters were sent out. And so they're aware, but nobody really was against the resorting back the way it was before. So the neighbors, they're in the favor of being the, you know, going back the way it was before, because the way the property is located is mostly like close to Montgomery Street. It's not so much into the neighborhood.
We have another question from coming over the computer from 5th District County Commissioner Tanya Milton. Tanya, you have a question? Unmute yourself, Tanya. You know how this works. Still can't hear you. Tanya, we can't hear you.
Chairman, I think we've got her question in the chat. I'm not going to relay that to the board if that's appropriate.
Commissioner Milton asked a question. If the property was zoned commercial when Ms. McGovern purchased it, and it was.
It was?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, and if I could just lay out sort of a little bit of history here. As Mr. Antemo mentioned before, Ms. Magabo has operated a hair salon at this location for approximately 15, 16 years. So during all that time, this property was zoned highway business. That zoning district doesn't exist anymore. We replaced that, or we eliminated that as a district when NUZO was adopted. So only since September of 2019 has this property, the subject property, been zoned RSF6 from September to now. But business has operated at that location throughout that time. The adjacent properties, which were also zoned highway business, were zoned during the NUZO process to neighborhood business. And most likely what happened in this scenario is that when you look at the subject property at the corner there, or not the corner, but the third property in fronting on Birchfield, it looks like a single family house. So that's probably why that zoning line was placed there, the RSF6 line. Now, to Ms. Wilson's point earlier, we did find that the limited business zoning district could be appropriate at this location and act as a transition as you move into the neighborhood there along Birchfield. It does permit, as a use by right, the current use of the property, as well as a number of other commercial uses, as Mr. Antemo showed on the use table.
I have a question.
Mr. Lawson, this is Dwayne Jared. Stevens.
Hold on, Dwayne. Does Jared have a question first?
Sorry about that.
I wanted to know how the Duren relocation will affect this property.
That's a good question. We did look at that, and I can show you the exhibit that shows the location. We don't believe, based on the location of where Project Duren is planned to go, will impact Ms. McGabo's property. Let me see, I'll show you. Mm-hmm. So her properties are at this corner.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens.
Okay, there we go, I got my mic. Mr. Lawson, I just wanted to confirm, I understand that in the BL zoning type that would allow for a lighter use that would also bring the current use into a conforming standard, status. But did you say that a part of that was also residential in the BL, like different types of res?
And I will pull back up the use table, but essentially the BL district is a less intense zoning classification than the BN. The BN allows things like convenience stores, restaurants, gas stations that are not permitted in BL. So that was really the impetus behind the BL. As you can also see on this chart, the BL does allow single family residential. So should this property at some point in the future convert to a home, it would also be a permitted use, a conforming use.
Right. Okay, thank you. I was just trying to get confirmation that residential is still allowed in the BL usage because I wanted to further explain and further make it further clear to the petitioner that the lighter use would be more appropriate and would still allow for the current usage. So I just wanted to further drive that point home to the petitioner in that line of questioning. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wayne Noah.
Clarity. Highway business, which of the two is most closely related or in like BN or BL? Because I think we all agree that it was highway business.
Right.
And under, we have no clue when or why, well, we know when, we don't know why it was changed. We have our assumptions. Which one is most closely like highway business?
Out of these two districts, Mr. Noah, the neighborhood business district is closer in terms of intensity, but the BH zoning district was a pretty intense district. It allowed a lot of heavy commercial uses. So it was even more intense than either of these, but closer to BN in terms of intensity.
Any other questions to staff or petitioner? Anybody else out in the audience? Nobody here in the building asking a question? Okay, then I guess I need a motion on the floor. Anybody like to make a motion?
No, Irvin, motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Second?
Poll second.
Thank you. Mr. Michael Brown, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Tom Woodwardy?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Just to be clear, the motion is to approve staff's recommendation, which was to deny the BN zone, correct?
And approve the L.
Yes, and to approve the
alternate and approve zoning the L.
Yes.
Okay, okay, yes. I vote in favor of Thank staff's you, recommendation.
Mr. Thank Joseph you. Irvin?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Coles, Travis Coles?
Yes.
Viola Parker?
Yes.
Dwayne Noah?
No.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
And Laureen Bowles?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes. Next. Mr. Watkins, you with us?
Yes.
Okay, sir. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
We're going to item 8, special use permit, 111-113 West Anderson Street. Mr. Lotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next agenda item is a special use request. This is for property at 111-113 West Anderson Street in District 2. The petitioner is requesting a special use for animal services indoor. Animal services indoor is a use on the City of Savannah use table, permitted in a number of zoning districts, and very recently it was permitted or adopted by the mayor and alderman as a special use in the TN1, TN2 zoning classification. The petitioner is therefore requesting approval of animal services indoor as a use at the subject property. This property is located, as I mentioned, at 111 and 13 West Anderson Street between Barnard Street and Whitaker in the metropolitan neighborhood. It's approximately a quarter acre in size, and it is developed with a single story building and parking lot that was previously operated as a dentist's office. And the property is within the TN1 zoning classification. And this is a street view of the subject property. I should mention, when the mayor and alderman adopted the change in the text to the zoning ordinance to allow this as a special use in the TN1 zoning classification, it did come with a number of conditions or standards, if you will, for when this property is located within this zoning district, or when this use, I should say, is located within the zoning district. It's required to meet sound transmission class rates in conjunction with the sound standards as outlined in the city specs. In the TN1 and TN2 zoning districts, animal services indoor is permitted as a special use with these conditions. The first condition is that animal shelters and kennels shall be prohibited. The use shall be located along a collector or arterial roadway. as classified within the ordinance. You know, this doesn't apply here, but in the TN2 zoning district, the use shall only be located on a corner lot. This property is in the TN1 zoning district. And the next condition that does apply to this property is that the use shall only be permitted to operate between the hours of 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Surgeries, outdoor pet runs, and boarding are all prohibited. So those are conditions that were part of the adoption of this text change that permitted the use as a special use in these zoning districts. In review of the special use criteria, staff did find that it meets the criteria for special uses outlined in the zoning ordinance. We're recommending approval of the proposed special use. Should the Planning Commission vote today to approve the special use, then this item will be forwarded to the mayor and aldermen for consideration, as it is similar to a zoning action and final decision is made by the city of Savannah. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions to Mr. Lotson? Anybody in the audience here?
Hi, I'm Barbara Zinn, the petitioner.
Thank you.
I'm here if anybody has any questions, or if you want to hear a brief outline, I'll be happy to share that.
Yes, ma'am. You have 10 minutes to make your presentation and give us a little synopsis.
Okay, well, I don't think it's going to take that long. This is, in my, our opinion, is this wonderful union of community service and a neighborhood service that is in high demand. Since there's so many pets these days, the density keeps going up, and yet there's still only one or two vets in that, you know, the walking distance in the whole historic area. The Victorian neighborhood in the historic district. Her name is Dr. Vance Randall Kinsey. She is a doctor in veterinary medical science, graduate of University of Georgia. She has 20 years of experience in the healthcare of pets. Her business model is completely neighborhood oriented. As a matter of fact, the name is Neighborhood Vet. It centers on preventative care and holistic treatment. So the criteria is met by the nature of her practice. She's presently practicing in St. Simon, Georgia. There'll be no surgeries, no outdoor runs, no boarding. The building itself was built as a dental office, and it has a large parking lot, as you see in the front, as well as parking in the rear. And it's already by nature, you know, it's a block, so its sound already has a good sound protection. And it really is just, you know, one person at a time walking, not having to drive, not a big box, you know, preventative medical office for pets. And I just think it's a great match. So she's already consulted with an architect and has, you know, in the middle of developing plans to make improvements, you know, landscaping and everything that's necessary to make this a very nice community office. So I guess that's basically a short outline. The Victorian Neighborhood Board is overwhelmingly in support of it and has voted on that and written a letter. The neighbors have written letters supporting it. Let me see if there's anything else. I think it's just going to be, you know, the whole, it's neighborhood oriented. And so it's going to be kind of a subtle, you know, subtle business. And very helpful to a lot of people. There's a high demand, a need for this. So we're excited, and she's willing to you know, there's nothing in the criteria that doesn't work with this. And that's, I just want to say thank you for considering.
Thank you, ma'am.
If you have questions, I have a lot of information here.
Does anybody out there have any questions? Any commissioners for staff or for the petitioner?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Lee Smith, for staff, hadn't this property something, I guess, on our agenda in the last couple of years?
Yeah, more recently than that, Mrs. Smith. What happened was there was initially a rezoning request by the property owner to a different district to permit an animal services clinic at this location. That petition was withdrawn, and in further conversations among staff and city staff, in reviewing the TN1 zoning classification, we made the determination that it made more sense to amend the text and place these conditions that I talked about earlier on this, because it was an appropriate use, or could be, through the special use provisions in the zoning ordinance. So it went that route. So you've seen it before, this property, related to those petitions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lotson. Is there anybody in the, there's no one here in the audience, the building, no one to speak on this matter. So anybody out in the computer world, please raise your hand on your computer. We don't have anybody there either. Okay, well, I'll look for a motion.
Move to approve staff recommendation.
Coles, second. Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Coles. We'll go to a vote. Mr. Michael Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Woodworthy?
Yes.
Mr. Watkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Joseph Irvin? Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Mr. Joseph Irvin? Ms. Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Beulah Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
And Lauren Bowles?
Yes.
And is Mr. Irvin there? Okay, motion passes. We go to item number 9, rezoning map amendment, 351 Technology Circle, rezoned from QIE to IL. Mr. Lotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next item under regular business is a rezoning request at 351 Technology Circle. The petitioner and property owner is the Savannah Economic Development Authority. The subject of the petitioner is requesting to rezone a 6.2 acre portion of a 36 acre parcel on the north side of Jimmy DeLoach Parkway from the current OIE classification, which is office institutional extended, to the light industrial classification. The property that you see highlighted on the screen is the entire parcel, and I'll get into here in just a second the portion that the applicant is requesting. As I mentioned, the subject property is on the north side of Jimmy DeLoach on the southeast quadrant of Technology Circle, and it's within the Crossroads Business Center that you can see here in the Technology Circle Engineering Drive area. That center was established legally in 1995 and is governed by a declaration of covenants that were filed at that time. The subject property is an undeveloped site that includes some wetlands on the site. This is a tax map showing the parcel. This parcel and most of the parcels on the south side of Engineering Drive are owned by CETA. And I'll get into this in just a minute, but as we mentioned in the pre-meeting, the adjacent parcel located here is the next item on the agenda. These are somewhat related. We'll dive into that here in just a second. This is an aerial map that shows the subject property outline adjacent to or as a part of the Crossroads Business Center.
This is a zoning map showing the property zoned office institutional. I should mention that the office institutional extended zoning classification is a district that was established technically just prior to NUZO being adopted, but it was became a part of the new zoning ordinance. This property, as well as the adjacent property, or everything you see within this red line, has that zoning classification. The zoning line on the far east side is also the municipal boundary between the city of Savannah and Port Wentworth, which is further to the east. This is the exhibit provided by the applicant that shows the 6.2-acre portion of the subject property that they request to be rezoned from office institutional extended to light industrial. There is an access easement to the adjacent property to the east that comes from Technology Circle and Engineering Drive across the railroad track and to provide access to this property. Because that property to the east is bounded on two sides by rail, on the north by Interstate 95, and on the south, although it is bounded by Jimmy DeLoach Parkway, it's in the same location as a bridge, so there is no vehicular access to this property other than as described on the subdivision plat, which shows the platted access. This is an exhibit also provided by the applicant that shows a potential location for cross access from Technology Circle and onto the adjacent property. The reason this exhibit is important is in this discussion is that the petitioner is hoping to relocate the existing easement from generally in this area and move it south. A lot of that has to do with what's happening on the north side of Engineering Drive, which mostly is owned by the Board of Regents and is part of the Georgia Tech campus. And they're trying to move potential truck traffic away from Engineering Drive and make sure that it accesses Technology Circle only. And I have some more detail on that in a minute as well. But when staff met with the applicant, our position was that the proposed 6.2 acres as shown here was more property than is needed to serve as an access point into the adjacent property. The issue with that is, as of today, the applicant isn't 100% sure where this crossing is going to be. There's currently ongoing discussions with the railroad and the adjacent property owner who wants to develop the property as to where the best location is. There's, as I mentioned, significant wetlands. So they're in the process of doing engineering as well as negotiating with, I believe it's Norfolk Southern, as to the exact location of the crossing. Because we could not say this crossing is definitely going to be in this location, so we should just rezone that portion, it made it more difficult in terms of coming up with a reasonable accommodation that would allow both properties to fulfill kind of the access agreement that they have with each other and for the property to the east to be developed under the light industrial zoning classification. One thing that from a staff standpoint we were opposed to is rezoning of all 6 acres of this to the light industrial classification when you only need enough width to create access to the adjacent property. That would open this property up to future development in an industrial nature. What we've done in order to alleviate what we saw as a problem, you'll find in our some conditions that we added to our recommendation. We are recommending that the 6.2 acres not be rezoned, but in lieu of that, we're recommending that the portion of the property required for the access easement be rezoned. Under these conditions, you'll see, I better make this a little larger. Here are the conditions that we've added to our recommendation to rezone to light industrial, that the site development plan, any site development plan submitted for the subject property be reviewed and approved by the Planning Commission prior to the issuance of a site development permit, that vehicular access to Godley Road be right turn in from Technology Circle and left turn out onto Technology Circle only,
and that access to Engineering Drive be prohibited. We're also conditioning that the existing vegetative buffer along the eastern boundary of the subject property be disturbed only to the extent necessary to establish the proposed access as determined by the Planning Commission, and that the final location, this is most importantly, the final location of the proposed access shall be approved by the executive director of the MPC prior to adoption of the rezoning by the mayor and aldermen. So what that means is, in our discussions, at least with the applicant, they believe that they'll have that final location determined prior to this item being heard by the mayor and aldermen. So that location will have to be approved prior to the mayor and aldermen hearing it. They've indicated to us that they can have that completed before this gets heard by City Council. And our intent would be that the rezoned portion of that 6.2 acres only be as is needed to establish access between this property and the adjacent property. I know that's a lot, but I'll be happy to answer any questions. The applicant's attorney is also here today to answer questions.
Mr. Wayne Noah.
Can you put the zoning back up for a second? Okay, the property between the railroad tracks, is that one parcel that goes from 95 to Puller Parkway, or are there two, and is that divided at Jimmy DeLoach?
Yeah, let me show you. Oh, you mean here?
Yeah, above and below, two lakes and one lake.
One property, well, let me do this. I'm going to show you a different map that'll show this a little better.
Right there.
Yeah, so technically, this property and this property are separate parcels, but the same ownership. Same thing with this parcel down here. But this parcel is not part of the rezoning that we're going to hear next because it's just a detention pond, so they don't need to rezone it. But the property south of Jimmy DeLoach is not associated with this.
If that's right. Your question. And that is someone other than CETA?
Yes. CETA is the owner of the highlighted property and some other properties over here. This property to the east is owned by Southern Metals.
And we are entertaining putting a road through a person's property that is not adjacent, or not the same owner as the petitioner's property, correct?
No, that's not correct. So right now there's an existing platted access easement,
right, which
roughly in this area, but in the CETA's property over to Southern Metals property.
It's not that little line that goes right there?
You mean here?
No, but right there.
No, that's a feature on the ground. That is, the easement is not shown on this map.
Well,
Karen Jarrett here. So I'm looking at this and I see your feature on the ground, and I see that feature on the ground continues over one railroad and then continues over the other railroad. And when I looked at the topographic map, it looks like the grades at the second railroad are more favorable for construction than the grades at the first railroad. So has anyone explored connecting this property to Logistics Way rather than to Technology Circle? It seems to me it's more of a logistics project than it is a technology project. And I know that those names really don't mean a whole lot, but I just don't understand why we're routing to Technology Circle something that looks like it should be going to Logistics Way graphically with the grades and the existing easements or whatever they are, the existing features.
And Ms. Jarrett, I should probably let the applicant's attorney answer that question, because
okay,
I know they did consider all their options prior to filing this petition.
Thank you.
Any further questions from commissioners? The staff? Is the petitioner here? Yes, sir. You want to come forward, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Pinnell. I'm here representing the Savannah Economic Development Authority. I'm their general counsel. Let me first answer Ms. Jarrett's question, since it's I guess the most recent question about this. Yes, we explored all options on how to get into this property from other points of entrance. As you'll see from this, I don't know if it still has it up or not, there's some significant wetlands on the south end of that parcel, and coming off of Logistics Way is just not feasible, because you would have to cross a large wetland area, and to do that would be cost prohibitive. We also looked at several other interest points farther towards I-95, and likewise, there was just not good access points, and it was all cost prohibitive from making those reality. I guess backing all the way up, prior to the UZO, all of this property around Technology Circle was zoned heavy industrial, which is consistent with the majority of the rest of the developments in and around Technology Circle. This was developed by CETA going back to the mid-1990s as Crossroads Business Center. The majority of the businesses across Jimmy DeLoach are heavy industrial uses at big warehouse distribution. Technology Circle in itself is a little different, and really in that how it's been developed over the last several years with Georgia Tech on the northern end, and then with Great Dane at the entrance of the park. All that being said, we were not aware that this had been rezoned to OIP really until January of this year, when we were working with the adjacent landowner on this access easement. The Savannah Economic Development Authority actually sold a portion of the property that Southern Metals, the adjacent property owner, now owns. Fast forward to today, that property is actually under contract to be sold to another user that we help facilitate, we meaning the Savannah Economic Development Authority. That sale is contingent on this access, and that's why we have this before you today, and ask that you go ahead and take this up today instead of continuing it to a future meeting. I appreciate staff, in particular the director and Mr. Lotson, in working with us over the last couple of weeks on this petition. We have worked with them on the staff recommendation and are in agreement with the conditions that staff has put on this rezoning request. And so with that being said, we would ask that the commission approve the staff recommendation with the conditions as presented. We do think in the next few days, if not week, we can have a final location for that access point that we can have the director approve and then submit to City Council. So when they take it up at their meeting in May, all of this will be finalized, and we won't delay the potential sale of that adjacent property next door. So with that, I'm happy to answer any further questions and appreciate your time.
Ms. Jarrett.
Okay. Can you tell me what that feature is?
The feature. I'm
the
sorry.
The feature, that what looks like a road crossing from Technology Circle to Logistics Way.
I'll be honest with you, I think that's an old timber road that accessed in there many years ago. That's not a current road or access point.
Well, who owns it?
It is owned by, well, the portion that comes across the subject party is owned by CETA, and then obviously the property in between the railroad tracks is currently owned by Southern Metals.
Okay.
And just for clarification, the current access easement is specific to the area coming directly across from Engineering Drive. The reason that our petition was for the 6.2 acre parcel was to give us the flexibility to move that off of Engineering Drive. And that was at the request of the adjacent owner, Georgia Tech, again, trying to distance this access point away from their campus. And again, you know, in working with staff, we are fine with the conditions that they put on this to locate that road, hopefully at a site certain in the next several days. But once you get farther south of the 6.2 acre site, you're dealing with a lot of wetlands, so there's no way to go any further south. And then again, we're trying to get it off of Engineering Drive, and that is the reason it's kind of unknown at this point is where that final access point will land.
I hear you. I'm going to belabor the point, if you'll excuse me.
Sure.
Engineering is my background, and I just don't understand why we're not using what was already developed as a road for timber removal, which means heavy trucks, that seems to come directly to Logistics Way. Why wouldn't we use that for the access to
this? I understand your questioning, and it looks that way from this aerial. However, it's not really, what you're seeing is not what's actually there. And we've had Thomas and Hutton out there and spent a lot of money with them trying to find another access point, and there's just not one available.
Any other questions for petitioner? Mr. Noah? No?
Thank you.
Well, what's difficult to deal with is if what I'm seeing is not actually there, then it's hard for me to actually make an accurate decision on it. And I have to go with my colleagues' questions about that, that I'm can't make a decision on something I'm unsure about the information that's been provided.
Was there anybody out in the computer world wanting to ask a question? Raise your hand on the computer screen.
Marcus, have we heard anything from anyone other than who he's spoken about with Georgia Tech? And
yeah, Mr. Noah, really those have been the only parties involved in this, you know, because of the geography of this location, okay. CETA, Georgia Tech, and Southern Metals.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
We have a question. Yes, sir, Mr. Lee.
This is kind of a comment and a question. You know, and I see the point about, and I used to call them logging roads. You know, obviously it's much longer and you split the Southern Metals, you split their property. So it's almost like a taking. So I can definitely understand why they're doing this. It would make no sense at all to, you know, if I were with the project and what they're looking at, would make no sense to take that direction. It exactly. Mm-mm.
Doesn't the Southern Metals project have that trapezoidal shape in the middle, right beside that easement or that
you mean here?
Logging road?
Ken, this is
which part? Yeah, that's
yes, that's Cedar's property.
I'm not sure if I'm pointing.
Okay.
I have a Troy Justit. You have a question for petitioner or staff, sir?
Yes, this is Jim Gerard. I represent the petitioner in the next case. The timber road that you're pointing to is actually the boundary line between my client's property, which is owned by Southern Metals, and CETA's property to the south. CETA owns the portion of this in quote timber road that runs diagonally, I guess, in a southeast direction. We've done surveys of the property as recent as 2 years ago when we purchased it. We did not reflect in either the title to the property or by survey that a road existed there right now. Nor did we find anything in the public records that would give anybody the right to use that.
Is there anybody else with a question?
Call for questions.
This is Michael. I guess I would tend to respect somebody's petition to use their property as they see fit, but maybe the what could be clarified. Do we have a wetlands delineation map of any sort?
Mr. Brown, as I understand it, there is engineering ongoing on this site right now as part of establishing the location for the crossing. A current wetland delineation was not provided with the application, however.
I mean, because what some of the people on the commission are saying is, wouldn't it be better to do X? But I guess CETA and the other property owner are saying that the location of the road has to be determined by the location of the wetlands. But we don't have a wetlands map, even an old one. I mean, to me, that would say, well, you just can't go through there because going through wetlands with a facility like this is very difficult. So, I mean, I think it would be better to have a wetlands map, but if you don't have it, then you don't.
Mr. Brown, I think in addition to that, the parties involved, I think, were all, including staff, all felt like it was important to relocate that access away from Engineering Drive as far south as is reasonable. So I think that would be more difficult with using that existing logging road if the intent is to relocate the access to the south.
Any further questions?
If you use the diagonal timber road, you wouldn't have to cross the Cedar property, would you?
Well, I think what Ms. Jarrett is referring to is the property adjacent to the east, which is private property in Port Wentworth. So that would probably really require some kind of agreement between that property owner and Southern Metals.
Understood. Never mind.
Give the petitioner a chance to make a final statement.
And I apologize for not having a wetlands map, but I think you can see from the rendering up on your screen, it's a pretty significant wetlands that runs from the southern portion of the large parcel all the way up on that diagonal track. I mean, you can see it from the coloration of the trees there. That's the issue of why that diagonal logging road, whatever you want to call it, is really not an option, is it's a significant wetland through there. And as Mr. Lotson just said as well, on the eastern side here, we're dealing with other private property owners. We are just trying to give access to the Southern Metal site, that is all. And we would respectfully request that the commission approve the staff's recommendation with the conditions so we can get the access point moved further south off of Technology Circle and give the property owner proper access. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Somebody like to make a motion?
Noah, make a motion that we approve staff's recommendation with the conditions specified.
Smith, second.
Mr. Brown, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Woodworthy?
Yes.
Mr. Watkins?
No.
Wayne Stevens?
Yes.
Ms. Karen Jarrett?
No.
Ms. Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Sheila Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Lauren Bowles?
No.
Motion passes. We go to item number 10, rezoning map amendment. Zero Godley Road, rezoned from I1E to IL. Mr. Lotson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this gets us to the last item under regular business and the adjacent property to the item that we just heard. The petitioner for this property on Godley Road is seeking rezoning from the current office institutional extended classification, also to light industrial. These properties are two vacant parcels, approximately 22 acres on the north side of Jimmy DeLoach Parkway. The property is bounded, as we mentioned, on the eastern and western sides by rail lines and does not have access to either Jimmy DeLoach Parkway to the south here or Interstate 95 to the north. So the tax map that shows the two parcels in question as it relates to the previous petition, that subject property is located here. This is a zoning map that shows the current zoning of the property is OIE. As I mentioned in the previous petition, the adjacent property is within the city of Port Wentworth, and that is a Port Wentworth zoning classification. The current property owner, which is Southern Metals, has owned the properties since May of 2019. That was prior to the adoption of the current zoning ordinance in September of that year. At that time, the properties were zoned heavy industrial. As a vacant parcel and considering the development of the property around Technology Circle, the current zoning classification was recommended during that ordinance adoption process and adopted by the mayor and aldermen. As Mr. Pinnell mentioned, Southern Metals is in the process of selling the property to a warehouse operator and is seeking their rezoning in order to help facilitate that transaction or to help CETA facilitate that transaction. This is a exhibit that really shows for the board the separation, if you will, of the property by the rail lines that continue on either side. This is the business center here, and there's significant warehouse development both in Port Wentworth and on the south side of Jimmy DeLoach Parkway across from this property. This is a proposal at this point, a concept plan for the proposed warehouse that the petitioner would like to develop on the subject property. This access shown here is not the likely access point that will be created pursuant to the discussion that Mr. Pinnell just had regarding the relocation of that easement. This is shows the platted easement, the existing platted access easement from Engineering Drive over to the subject property. And as we discussed earlier, that location is being considered by Norfolk Southern and the applicants, and we hope to have a response from them regarding the final location very soon so that it can be provided to the mayor and aldermen for their consideration when they hear this item as a zoning matter, potentially in the month of May. The subject properties do exhibit very unusual features, primarily related to the access and the adjacent property to the west. The property does have legal access via this platted easement because it is bounded on both sides by rail lines. This is seems to be the only potential access to the site. The adjacent property owner, as we know now, is also seeking to rezone a portion of the property to facilitate this development. We do find, in terms of the light industrial zoning classification, that the most likely and most appropriate use of this property is as the applicant is proposing in terms of warehousing. However, staff finds that there are mitigating circumstances that require conditions be applied as we recommended in the previous application. Because the exact location of the crossing will not be determined until City Council acts on the requested rezoning, the Planning Commission should have the opportunity to review that site plan, we believe, prior to development on the property. This would also allow the Planning Commission to ensure compliance with ordinance regulations related to buffer, stormwater, and other development issues that are not yet fully vetted at this time. With that, staff is recommending approval of the request to rezone this property to the light industrial classification. We are also recommending a number of conditions as we did on the previous petition, and those conditions are outlined here related to the development plan being reviewed and approved by the Planning Commission, the vehicular access to Godley Road being right turn in from Technology Circle and a left turn out onto Technology Circle only, with access to Engineering Drive being prohibited, and with the final location of the proposed access being approved by the executive director. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions to Mr. Lotson? Staff, excuse me, is the petition wish to comment anything about this?
Yes, this is Jim Girard. I'm with Oliver Maynor. I represent Southern Metals Properties. I just want to give a little bit of history on the property that we're dealing with today. Was previously stated, there are two parcels involved here, a 15.9 acre parcel, which is the trapezoidal parcel to the south, and then there's a little triangle that's to the north, that's about 8 acres. We do own the property up to 95, which is in Port Wentworth, because it's part of a parcel number 9 that CETA owns. So when we purchased the property, we purchased that whole parcel, which is partly the property that we're talking about today, and to the north up to 95. That parcel 9, as well as CETA's parcel to the south of the 15 acre parcel, is almost 100% wetlands. As was stated, we purchased the property in May of 2019. We had worked with CETA and North Point, who was the owner of the 15 acre parcel, for almost a year and a half before we purchased the property. A lot of the negotiations dealt with access, because as was mentioned, this piece of property is within 2 railroad tracks. It's valuable in that it can provide any business of rail access to transport goods that are processed on site. But as far as getting to the property, that has always been the biggest issue. We did do wetland studies of the property. In fact, even the SAGIS maps shows that all of those properties to the south and north of this 15 acre piece are wetlands. In fact, in December of 2017, CETA and North Point actually submitted a site development plan to the MPC for use of this property as a recycling center. As was mentioned before, at the time, this property was zoned heavy industrial, and recycling centers was a permitted use in that zoning district. It was approved. The site development plan was approved, and in reliance upon that approval in December 2017, and on the zoning classification as it was in May of 2019, we purchased the property. Subsequent to purchasing the property, we had been working with Norfolk Southern over the development of a sidetrack agreement, which has taken about a year. At the time that we purchased the property, as was pointed out, we did get an easement extending to our property from Engineering Drive over the parcel that we just discussed that was owned by CETA. We explored all the alternatives, but we felt that was the best. And the railroad, for which we also got an easement to go over their tracks, agreed. When it got time to actually start construction on the recycling center, as John Pinnell pointed out, we found out that the property had been rezoned to OEI. According to North Point, they had not received any notice. According to CETA, they had not received any notice. And my client, Southern Metals, hadn't received any notice. At that time, we actually applied for restoration of the previous zoning classification of IH, because we felt that was probably the best zoning classification under which that we could develop our property, because recycling centers weren't permitted under light industrial. We did find a purchaser for the property through the help of CETA and North Point, who wants to use the property for just warehousing and not a recycling center. The property is the part that is to the north, that little triangle, is subject to the Crossroads covenants. And as far as the property to the east, which is the Crossroads business expansion site, there are a number of warehouses there that are owned by Duke, as you all know, and I think they're all shown there in the diagram that you're looking at. So it's consistent. The intended warehouse use of the property is consistent with the new zoning code. And as far as the use as it is now zoned for OEI, because of the location between the tracks, and it's not couldn't be used for residential purposes, obviously, or healthcare, educational, cultural, lodging, which are primarily the uses permitted in OEI. The area needs businesses that have rail access like this property does. It's a very valuable piece of property if you can get to it. And we're willing to, at the present time, sell it to somebody who could put it to a use that Cedar promotes. And that is one that does warehousing, manufacturing, and processing, which is what they're all about. And we would respectfully ask the commission to accept staff recommendations and rezone the property to light industrial with the conditions that the director has set forth.
Anybody have any questions for petitioner? Is there anybody out there in the computer world? Raise your hand. Nope. Okay. Would accept the motion?
Motion to approve on staff recommendation with conditions as stated.
No second.
Thank you. Mr. Brown, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Woodwardy?
Yes.
Mr. Watkins?
Yes.
Mr. Dwayne Stevens?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Karen Jarrett?
Yes.
Ms. Elizabeth Epstein?
Yes.
Mr. Travis Coles?
Yes.
Ms. Eula Parker?
Yes.
Mr. Wayne Noah?
Yes.
Mr. Lee Smith?
Yes.
Ms. Lauren Bowles?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you. Now we go to presentations. And we have item number 11, Collier Brownville Contributing Resources Map Update.
Mr. Chairman, while we are getting ready for presentation,
I thought it was on, sorry. While she's getting ready to do her presentation, I just wanted to take a moment to thank the historic preservation staff. They've worked diligently to with these communities to try to make sure that they were able to move forward with getting status. In addition to this, I wanted to make sure that the general public and you all knew what the requirements were. One of the things I am finding is that a lot of folks have gotten historic preservation status, but they don't really understand what the requirements are with regards to making sure they meet the redevelopment standards, et cetera, regarding being in that district. So this is a really good opportunity for people to learn more about what it means to be in the historic preservation district and for you all to learn a little bit more about Collier Brownville. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to do that.
Thank you. Take it away, Leah.
Thank you. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Leah Mahalik. I'm the Director of Historic Preservation here at the MPC. But more importantly, I did want to introduce you to Aslan Drosky. Some of you probably haven't met her yet. She started with us last summer, and pretty much every document you're going to see today, she created for us. So she's been just as big of a part as anybody else. Let me start over. So there was a resurvey done of the Collier Brownville Historic District. This was phase three of a citywide historic resources survey, or resurvey, depending on the district. In 2012 to 2013, Carver Village was surveyed. It had never been surveyed. 2015 to 2016, the Victorian Historic District was resurveyed. In 2018 to 2020, the district was so large, we had to do two separate surveys with two separate grants. we resurveyed and expanded the survey area of the Kyler Brownville Historic District. This is, and now we're working on portions of resurveying the Thomas Square Historic District. There's almost 3,000 buildings in that district. So even compared to the 800 and so of Kyler Brownville. So that one's going to take us a while. But that's sort of the status of the citywide historic resources survey project. So again, between 2018 and 2020, there was an in-depth survey done of Kyler Brownville. It was performed to identify buildings that were built between 1867 and 1937. Well, we call that the period of significance. And that's what identifies the neighborhood as significant, is what happened in that neighborhood between those years. So almost any building, I say, built between those years would be considered historic unless it's lost historic integrity. So even though this building was surveyed, this district was surveyed in the 1990s, a couple of things. We're all human and we miss buildings. Secondly, outbuildings were not considered important until the recent past. So that's one of the many reasons you resurvey districts over time. Another reason is the state requires it so that we can keep our certified local government status and keep getting more grants. So previously surveyed in the 1990s resulted in 671 buildings that are currently listed as historic in the district. That's also known as contributing. You'll see that term used interchangeably. However, again, many buildings have been overlooked or left out in the past, and this map shows the 90 buildings that we discovered that were built within that period of significance. There were actually many more that were built within that period of significance but didn't have historic integrity. They had been changed way beyond recognition. So these were the 90 that Aslan and I determined through using the consultant's report and recommendations that we are proposing to add as, quote, historic or contributing buildings to the existing map. You can see they're pretty much spread out throughout the district, but there is a large concentration in this area here. And that's because that is an expansion that was done of the district a very long time ago, but the survey was never actually performed. So we do have a lot in that area over there. So this is the first page of the brochure that we sent out, which I'll talk to you about in a minute. But this is the actual map, the one that will be part of the zoning ordinance. So the ones that are shown in blue are the same ones that are shown in blue on the other map, but this would be your official document. So we're doing this presentation for you all as basically a precursor to the staff initiated text amendment to add these 90 buildings. The Kyler Brownville Historic District was the local district. The national is a couple years older, was created in 1999 and added to the zoning ordinance. As with most historic districts, the purpose is to promote sensitive rehabilitation of historic buildings and ensure visual compatibility of new construction within the area. This map has not had a wholesale update since the original survey in the 1990s. And with the exception of the creation of this GIS map that you see here in 2016, but that did not change the status of any of the buildings at that time. We just brought it from a hand drawing to a computer drawing at that time. So a couple of things spurred this as to be phase three, the age of the current map and the realization that the areas outside of the National Register Historic District that I was just talking about hadn't been surveyed. The state requires that an updated survey be performed every 10 to 15 years. It had been 22 years, so it was a little late, but we're okay now. And as you can imagine, taking no action would leave these buildings unprotected. They're considered non-contributing and you can demolish them at will. All right. So as I mentioned, we analyzed all of those buildings and determined that these 90 buildings, based on using the National Register criteria for evaluation, were determined to be eligible. So I just wanted to show you a little example of, let's see, a little example of some of the buildings that we're talking about here. So in bad condition, but, you know, an original accessory dwelling unit to a main building on a lane, vital to understanding the importance of the development of this district. So this is some of the examples of some of those buildings. Some in better shape than others, but there's a difference between condition and integrity too. So, I mean, this even has, you know, clearly some original roofing material. So multifamily buildings were some of the other ones that were found. And that would include portions of Meldrum Row or later developments of Meldrum Row, such as these buildings here. Institutional buildings, there were a couple of churches and social halls that have been, that were built within that period. There was another one here. So church buildings, such as this one. Commercial buildings, we have a couple of those. And this is actually, this little guy right here is a great story. This portion right here is not original, but this building was recently purchased by someone, and he came unbeknownst to him, because it was, the letter was mailed to the previous owner because he just purchased it, but he came to talk to us about demolishing it the other day. And we said, oh, well, speaking of which, and he said, great, I'm going to make a coffee shop out of it. So we're hoping that, you know, there's an apartment building being built right across the street, the new police station nearby. So we're looking forward to that. How old is this picture? This was done by this consultant. So it would have been sometime between 2018 and 2020. These are the pictures directly from the survey. They're still there. And you should, they're fantastic. We even talked about using them for coffee stands with people are, you know, standing. I got very excited when we went to look at this building the other day. So underneath that blue stucco is all of the original wood siding. And the original doors are behind those bars. And I mean, there's way more there than meets the eye for sure. So we're pretty excited about this one. And 59 of those 90 buildings were simple residential, small, affordable housing buildings that were previously unrecognized. So to show you the full brochure, is this the full brochure? Yes, it is. So we sent out the public notice to those 90 property owners. And in addition to their letter explaining to them what I'm telling you now, we included these beautiful documents that Aslan created. So this map, what's the difference between historic and non-historic? So really, what is this going to do to your property, changing it from historic to non-historic? And then the list of the 90 buildings and their specific addresses. And then our information to contact us. We've since updated this brochure, and we're going to send it out again with, it's not on here because Aslan finished it today, but some information that Melanie was mentioning is, what does this do to your cost of repairs to your building? It compares cost of wood windows to vinyl windows are already not permitted in the district, but we did put that pricing in there. But for example, comparing the cost of a wood replacement window to a wood clad window or a double pane window or something like that, to show them a little bit more what it does to the cost of fixing your property. So we are most, okay, let's see. So over the years, just FYI, and you may have heard of the consultant before, Sarah Ward, anybody used to do this job. She was the consultant along with Bob Susevich. She was the surveyor for all of this work. We, including Sarah and I and Bob, over the 2+ year process now, we've met with the Neighborhood Association multiple times through the whole process and kept in touch with the president of the association the whole time. We attended many meetings, and our most recent meeting was actually in early April, where we met with them after we mailed these documents out, and we gave the president about 50 copies of it to hand deliver to the people that don't have email. And then the meeting is held right now with a conference call because there's a lot of people without internet in that neighborhood. So folks had this document before we met and we explained the process. We didn't get quite into details. I did hear kind of a little simpler about what it would do to affect their property. We wanted to, again, make this presentation today before proceeding with the text amendment to allow for even more public outreach and more time for your review, for neighborhood, for the review of the neighbors. We do plan to return to a near future meeting here for a vote and a recommendation to City Council on the text amendment. We've received at least a dozen responses from the people that we sent the letters out to, in addition to people we spoke to at the last neighborhood meeting. We're going to do another neighborhood meeting in May just to sort of go through it one more time. And all were positive and supportive of the proposal, which does not usually happen, with the exception of one person, and he's asked that his building not be listed. He actually owns a portion of one of the row houses that you saw, one of the Meldrum Row. So that leaves our quantity of buildings at 90. It would just eliminate the end unit. But that is the only negative, I would say negative, feedback that we've had so far. And I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Ms. Jarrett.
Thank you. I have a couple. One is, I see that the local district is larger than the national district. Are we moving to change the national district?
No, so the local has always been larger than the national. Okay. That's pretty typical. That's actually the case for all of our historic districts, including now Thomas Square, which used to be smaller and now it's larger than. It helps create a buffer mm-hmm. around the core of the what we Makes consider sense. The core of the oldest portion. It helps buffer it with compatible development. So it's pretty typical.
The other thing is, what can we do to help mitigate the cost for homeowners that are in an historic property and want to change windows or mm-hmm. improve their property?
We've talked about, with Melanie and I have actually been having recent discussions about this too, and starting some discussions about how we can make this more affordable and continue to have this affordable housing in Collier Brownville and not price people out of the houses. We don't have any conclusive ideas yet, and we're talking to more people about that. Melanie, do you wanna add to that?
Yes, it's been one of my big concerns that a lot of people either end up moving into these areas that are historic districts, or they rush to be in the historic district or to create it without understanding what the actual costs are, which is why we're tweaking the brochure, because we want to make sure that people understand that and they can budget appropriately. But I also want us to be innovative and creative with regards to helping people meet the requirements that are in place. And I think there's some interesting alternatives that can be used. And I'm asking staff, and as well as, myself, we're looking at all of those alternatives so that we can try to provide additional resources for people to do, be able to renovate their properties. We also have been talking with the folks at HSF, because they know a number of, skilled craftsmen that do work. And in a lot of cases, when people are ready to renovate their homes, they don't even know who to go to. They just get a regular, contractor or carpenter, versus going to talk to some of the more skilled trades folks who in some cases can either do a repair or a rebuild at the same cost of buying something new. So we're working on coming up with different strategies and having, different workshops to let people know what some of their options are, as well as just looking to see if there's any funding out that either the city or some of the other jurisdictions can apply for, that in this case the city can apply for, that would help with small grants or with a micro loans of some sort with some of the renovations. Because Carla Brownsville is a perfect example of a historic district where you've got so many different housing types and price ranges for those. And, in some cases, somebody just needs to have some new paint and some basic repairs on their exterior, and you know, normally the vinyl side in person comes knocking on the door. So we want to try to make sure that we don't have that happen, and we provide as many resources as we can. So that's a goal for us, and we're pushing.
Is a big important part of that too, and understand, you know, for folks to understand that it's actually going to be much more cost effective for you to keep and repair your wood siding than it is to cover your whole house in vinyl siding, you know, things like that. So I think education and outreach are a big part. Thank you.
Hey, Melanie, Leah, this is Dwayne. I've had a couple of conversations with HSF about the very thing that you guys are talking about. So if at all possible, I wouldn't mind or would like to join you guys in that conversation to throw some of the ideas out there that I had talked about with them.
I mean, a task force or something like that might not be a bad idea too, as we start to figure out what we're going to do about this here. Okay.
Ms. Chairman, this is Michael Brown. I have a question if you're ready.
Yes, sir.
What was the set of row houses that you put up and said one of the owners was not in favor? What was the name of that? And could you put it back on the screen?
Absolutely. Sure. So Meldrum Row, this is not a Meldrum Row building, but it's sort of a later adaptation of the same idea, which is this basically row houses of one story, what we'll call worker housing, because that's what it was called then. But it's nearby to Meldrum Row and in a similar form. It has had a rehab, we'll say, in the 80s that wasn't very sensitive, but technically it was built in the early 1900s.
Well, which one is Meldrum Row? Because these were built in, I would say, 98, 97. Where do you have a picture of Meldrum Row?
I do not have one because those are already historic buildings, so I did not include these, but these were not built in the 90s. They were rehabbed then. They were originally built in the early 1900s.
Well, I think you'd have, because some of those houses that get closer to Gwinnett, closer to EOA, some of them were rehab and some of them were infill. These were, I'm almost sure these were put in 97.
Not according to our consultant's research, but we could look into that more.
Well, okay. One of the things I'd like to put in front of SHPO and DCA is that this whole neighborhood was built or renovated on the basis of Charity Hospital and Florence Street School. And then the rehab of the row houses. I think the row houses are on what? 35th? Is that it? The main row houses.
Yeah, so, I mean, here's my
complaint.
A lot of...
I'm just going to say it. Here's my complaint to SHPO. They're wanting us to have a district designation. Why will they not consider scattered site housing when they approve low income housing tax credits? Why would that be?
I know nothing. I unfortunately know nothing about low income housing.
Well,
tax credits.
One of the biggest obstacles that we had.
Melanie's here.
Renovation. I'm sorry.
What was the question about the low income housing tax credits?
Yeah. So when this whole neighborhood was renovated, it was built upon three, you might call three anchors.
Right.
One being Charity Hospital, the other being Florence Street School, and then the third element being the row houses. And I think, I can't remember for sure, but they're the row houses that are generally in the vicinity of 35th and Burroughs. And I understood we went through about a 3-year process with DCA to get the main financing source were low income housing tax credits. This is not a complaint or a history tour. It was, we could not get and finally achieved DCA approval of scattered site housing that went along with the row houses and Charity Hospital and Florence Street School. I've learned in the last few months that DCA will not award low-income housing tax credits to scattered site housing. So my question to you through this process to SHPO is, how shall you renovate these houses and row houses without access to low-income housing tax credits? Because it's not the only tool available, but it's the principal financial tool. So I would ask that you get an official answer from SHPO and DCA as to, will they allow for low-income housing tax credits for the scattered site houses in this neighborhood? And I mean, I think it's a bit ironic that they want you or require you to have 10 or 15 year recertification of the historic structures, but the state will not award low-income housing tax credits to scattered sites in a neighborhood like Tyler Brownville.
If I may, Mr. Brown, the way that those low-income housing tax credits were initially put in place, they were for multifamily projects, and the nonprofits that ended up getting them ended up doing, you know, grouped housing that was contiguous. It wasn't set up to do scatter site housing, so you're correct about that. I don't think that the rules have changed on that, and that doesn't have anything to do with SHPO. That's just the way that the tax credits are set up. But
I disagree with that, because how are you to do historic preservation in a neighborhood when DCA itself says we don't consider somebody could have, let's just say, and this is what we tried to do, about 100 units, most of which would be in Florence Street School or Cherry Hospital, and then buy row houses, even if they're not contiguous to each other, and then somebody could manage those as rental properties within a neighborhood. After 2 or 3 years of effort with DCA directors, we finally got them to agree to using tax credits for anchor projects, anchor properties, and scattered site. Now I find out this year that no, they don't. They will not approve a tax credit application from scattered sites. Well, that means they're not, the very tool that helped us do this neighborhood is not now available. And so how do you avoid gentrification? You go in and have ownership, home ownership, and rental housing through someone like Mercy. I mean, otherwise we're all just talking about historic preservation and we're not doing it if you don't approve the main tools, namely low income and historic rehabilitation tax credits. I'm just making a point. It's a question straight up to those who are supposedly approving our designation.
That's fine. I was basically explaining to you how the low-income housing tax credits work. I was not talking specifically about this particular location. If we can look into it, but I think at the end of the day, this is basically a designation that the community has wanted, and we have not had any discussions with regards to utilizing low-income housing tax credits or any other type of financial mechanism to deal with major renovation for the properties here. We're looking at different alternatives and trying to be creative to see what other resources can be used in order to deal with renovations. But as you know, low-income housing tax credits are very specific. And when you start talking about historic preservation, DCA may have another set of funding that they use. And I know that there are other funding sources that they use in order to help the communities that end up with this type of designation deal with renovation. So that's a different type of application. It's not a low-income housing tax credit.
I don't know. We're talking...
We're talking about the preservation piece, but we can talk about
we're
that.
We're doing this to preserve neighborhoods. Okay. Mr. Chairman, well, y'all find another time that y'all can probably get together and discuss this.
Mr. Chairman, all I'm saying is that here's one state agency supervising historic designations and another state agency who is oblivious to historic preservation. That's all I'm saying. They should be four. Okay, thank you.
This, I want to make a clarification. This area is already designated. This area has been designated for over 25 years. This is not a designation. This is already designated. And actually adding a building as historic makes it eligible for rehabilitation tax incentives. As of now, any building listed as non-historic is actually not eligible for those. And this actually has nothing to do with SHPO. This is our local zoning ordinance that we're adding these buildings to. So there's a little bit of a distinction. And maybe those agencies will come together because actually the SHPO has just moved into DCA from natural resources. So maybe there will be more communication later.
Thank you. Is your presentation final? Well, I want to thank you for you and your staff's hard work and effort in putting this together and bringing this to us today. We thoroughly enjoy to see this and improvements and a lot of hard work.
Thank you very much. That's appreciated.
Yes, ma'am. With any other notices or anything like that, we are done. I wish everybody a happy week, a prosperous week, and a healthy week. Thank you.